You are listening to From Embers, a weekly show on CFRC 101.9 FM about anarchist and anti-authoritarian ideas and practice. We are broadcasting from the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples on land that has come to be called Kingston, Ontario, Canada, because of the thievery and brutality of the Canadian state and its empire-loving parents. From Embers is about fires, some real and some metaphorical. Fires started generations ago and tended to over the years. Little sparks all across this territory that we hope will grow, spread, and engulf the thieving state called Canada and the capitalist system that has plagued this land since the fur trade. This week on From Embers, I'm sharing an interview with Helen of the Certain Days Calendar Collective. The Certain Days Freedom for Political Prisoners Calendar Collective is a group of political prisoners and their outside supporters who for 18 years have been putting out an annual calendar full of radical art and writing. The proceeds of the calendar go to support prisoner struggles and other movements. We talked about what it's like to be in a project with such longevity, how our movements are handling prisoner support, and her experience of being in this collective with members both inside and outside of prison, both in Canada and in the United States, and across several different cities all at the same time. From Embers airs every week on CFRC 101.9 FM here in Kingston, as well as about three times a month online as a podcast. If you like what you hear and you want to hear us more regularly, either set yourself a little calendar reminder to tune in here every Wednesday at 8 p.m. to CFRC, or subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, whatever app you already use to hear your podcasts. Here's Helen on prisoner support and the Certain Days calendar.
My name is Helen. I'm a member of the Outside Collective of the Certain Days Calendar. I'm based in Montreal.
And what is the Certain Days Calendar?
The Certain Days Calendar is, the full title is actually the Certain Days Freedom for Political Prisoner Calendar, and it is a calendar. You hang it on your wall, lets you know what day your dentist appointment is and stuff like that, but it is also almost more like a magazine insofar as it has an article that goes along with each month, as well as a piece of artwork. The artwork actually hangs on your wall, and then the articles are in the front or the back, and they are about social justice issues, and every year there's a different theme, but every year that theme is linked back to the issues facing political prisoners. So this upcoming year, 2019 calendar, for example, links health and care, health/care, to the issues facing political prisoners. And the calendar is produced by prisoners and non-prisoners together.
Can you tell me more about that theme and how it was chosen?
Yeah. So, I mean, health is its own thing. It's a broad thing. People agree or disagree about the definition. Care, again, is a pretty broad theme. And then there's health care as its own thing. So we thought that all those three things tied really intimately, closely into social justice. You know, we're striving for a more caring world. We ought to care for each other within movements. There's a need for self-care to make our movements sustainable. You know, the planet needs to be healthy. We all need to be healthy physically, emotionally, spiritually. All of those things are very, very much challenged by the prison industrial complex. So, you know, there just seemed like there were a lot of issues in there that we could explore under the theme of health and care and healthcare as it relates to prisoner justice, political prisoners, but also just as it relates more broadly to movement building. So we just kind of started brainstorming topics that could fit under there, and there were way more than we could possibly hope to address in 1 year. So we, you know, we're blessed that way to have a lot of topics to choose from.
And what are some of the articles that speak to that this year?
We've got articles and artwork that speak to sex worker rights, and specifically the SESTA-FOSTA legislation that is trying to curtail those rights in the U.S. We got contributions about the struggle against HIV and AIDS. We got some really beautiful moving art pieces that just talk about what health is in its broader and more narrow conceptualizations. We got articles about medical neglect in prison, both in Palestine and in North America. We got tributes to specific people, Peter Collins and Alan Berkman specifically, as people who've contributed a lot to health justice from behind bars. You know, I could go on. but yeah, those are some highlights.
And in terms of artwork, who are some of this year's contributors? What can we hope to see?
Micah Besant, Debbie Africa. Who else did we get? We got Fernando Marti, Frizz Kid, Hikaru Ikeda. You know, I'm naming some more well-known and some less well-known names here. Tom Manning. So, you know, there's a mix of prisoners and non-prisoners, like there is with the articles. Mm-hmm. So, we're always happy when we can see that contributions from both sides of the wall.
How long has the calendar been coming out?
This is the 18th edition of the calendar. So the first one was in 2002.
And do you know when, like how it was started? Like what was the motivation for starting it back in?
I was actually around. At some point I took a short break from the collective, but in some form or another, I've been involved since the beginning. And what sort of predates the calendar itself as a project is some folks on the outside in Montreal at the time had a relationship with several political prisoners in New York State. And you know, we had a two-way relationship insofar as we were visiting, we were supporting parole campaigns, we were writing letters, you know, corresponding with them on the one hand, and on the other hand, we were learning so much from them. They were kind of like elders in the social justice struggles that we were involved with on the ground in Montreal. So when we would go visit or we'd correspond, they would always be imparting their wisdom in terms of their organizing experience and their analysis to issues we were working on. But we didn't have a shared project. So the calendar came about as that shared project, like what would be a way that we could work on something together, produce something together, you know, write, develop our ideas, get those ideas out into the world, and also raise some funds. Because, I mean, that's the other thing the calendar does that I haven't talked about too much so far this interview, is that we're a fundraiser. We fundraise for typically three groups in any given year, but we also encourage other projects to buy the calendar in bulk and then sell them for their own projects. So we can be a fundraiser for you, for anyone who's listening out there that's involved in a project that needs funds raised. So that was part of the original motivation too, was to, you know, get some money together to continue our work.
And are you the only collective member who's been around the whole 18 years, or are there others who've been in it the whole time?
I mean, I'm the only outside member. There's one inside member who's still with us, who's been with us since the beginning. There's been several, at this point, long-term outside members, but I'm the only one remaining from the original collective, yeah.
I feel like a lot of the people listening are organizers, but are organizers who are probably used to doing projects for like 6 months or a year. Can you talk a bit about what it was like to do the same project for 18 years?
Well, I mean, when I started the project, I was also someone who had done projects for 6 months, and there still continue to be projects that I do for 6 months. I mean, part of that is the reality of organizing. A lot of what we do is reactive, right? Or is short term. There's a need, you respond to it, you know, you do the work, you move on. But one thing that that doesn't allow is like deep relationship building, which I think is essential for any kind of revolutionary movement, any movement that's going to make really deep seated social change. We need to build long term relationships. We need to build relationships where we can grow together, right? Where we can learn from each other, but in a way that's more thoroughgoing than you're going to be able to do in 6 months or a year or even 3 to 5 years. And you need institutional memory. You need organizations or projects themselves to learn beyond what any even given individual learns. So that's one of the things that I love about the calendar, is to be able to just like, you know, put out all the calendars in front of me and look at them and think like, wow, we've really, you know, grown as a project in terms of, I think this year's calendar looks a lot better than the first calendar. We also sell a lot more copies, but also like to think through what the collective as an organization, as a project has learned and how it's grown over that amount of time.
Do you think that you have built relationships through doing the calendar that you draw on in your other organizing work?
Certainly with other folks, both inside and outside, who contribute to the calendar, for sure, like who are involved in the project. But I think, too, this is one of the things that's really in my mind this time of year, is there's people who I've never met before, but who've been ordering the calendar for many years, and who I know are involved in really important work in their own communities. And so in a way, I have a relationship with them, and the calendar has a relationship with them. It's kind of only, you know, on paper, or more accurately, like in a database where our orders are. But, you know, if any of those names ever came up as someone who like needed solidarity, they already feel like a comrade, because, you know, through our relationship with the calendar, like, you know, I feel like I've known them for many years, even though these are folks that I've never met, like on the West Coast or, you know, up north or on other continents in a few cases. So those relationships are there, even in sort of less obvious ways.
What do you think that you as an outside organizer have learned from working with prisoners on this project?
Wow, so much. Like, where to begin? Certainly, just the basics that, you know, one often learns in any kind of prisoner solidarity organizing is just like the realities of day-to-day life in prison, and how like the control of like every aspect of somebody's daily life is just so much more present. And, you know, so much more of a barrier to organizing, and yet people do it, right? Like, people organize from behind bars. You know, I know when I sit down and try and write a 500-word article, like, I have things that stop me in my day-to-day life, but it's, like, nothing compared to the things that stop someone from writing from behind bars. You know, just the mechanics of getting an article out and getting it into our hands, getting a piece of artwork out from prison into our hands, going back and forth with folks that have contributed from the inside about edits or about like developing the theme. You know, we realize, you know, the barriers that the state can put in your way trying to organize, it just becomes really obvious when you work with people whose lives are so controlled as they are in prison. So on that level, there's that. But I think just, you know, I mean, it's almost like cliche to say, but like the inspiration that comes from that, right? Like, and that's true, I guess, in any kind of solidarity work with people that are facing more repression than oneself, is like, you realize, okay, like people keep on struggling through so much, and, you know, like, who are we to quit that have it easier, right? So, you know, that's something that's a constant working on the calendar as well.
You have collective members not only inside and outside prison, but also in, like, I think several different cities. Is that true?
That's right. Right now, our outside collective is in Montreal, it's in Hamilton, it's in Baltimore, and it's in New York City.
So can you talk a bit about logistics? Like, how do you even do a project across so many different lines of difference and space?
I often wonder if this project would be possible without the internet. And I think that it would, but it would definitely be a lot harder. Several of our collective members have not met in person. So, you know, we rely on things like Google Hangouts or like Skype. And, you know, we have a listserv. We have, you know, access to our documents online. You know, so, but then when you compare and contrast that to the aspect where we're working with prisoners who don't have all those things, there's like the letter writing and the visits side of things as well. At some point in the past, we used to do a lot more of that as the Outcut side collective, but at this point, like, you know, we're all like hovering around age 40, the outside collective. So, you know, there's kids, there's full-time jobs. There's a border as well in between, you know, one set of our outside collective members and another. So seeing each other face-to-face is just, it's a lot harder, but so it's very, very rare. It's all online, essentially.
And, like, how has that changed since 2002? Like, was it, do you find that the project works better because of, like, new media platforms, or is it, like...
It works differently.
Okay.
It's very hard to say if it works better or not. I mean, we have a greater reach for sure. Like, I think there's a lot of people that buy the calendar that would never have heard of it before, before the internet, before social media. So, you know, we get orders from places that I don't know how they found out about it, but certainly, you know, one form or another, it was online. But back in 2002, like, all the outside collective was in Montreal. So we would just, you know, gather up our content. Then we would book off a weekend and all go into this office of a community group in Montreal, the Quebec Public Interest Research Group, which still helps us out in a lot of ways. But we would go into their office, you know, get on all the computers and, like, lay out the entire calendar over a weekend, all in the same room, you know, all able to have direct conversations. And in terms of communicating with our inside members at that point, they're all held fairly close to Montreal, like in New York State, but, you know, just across the border. We would just, you know, pile into cars and, like, go visit them. So, you know, there's a lot more direct conversation happening at that point. But over the years, that's changed both in terms of the possibility of communicating online as an outside collective, but also by necessity. Even with our prisoner members, over the last several years, we've moved on to a lot more, I think, passing messages through people. Like, let's say if we don't have a visit coming up, but we know someone else has a visit coming up with them, we might email that person and pass a message, which is something that, you know, we didn't really used to do.
How easy is the communication between you and your prisoner members? Do you find that they get your messages and you get theirs?
Generally, yes. Sometimes with a significant delay. In terms of getting messages to each other, we haven't really found too much, like, mail getting mysteriously lost. Sending calendars in to prisoners who order calendars, including contributors, that has been harder. Like, there's people that have contributed multiple times over the year, but that have consistently had their calendars returned, so they've never seen, you know, their work in print once they've submitted it.
Yeah, I mean, I know in the Canadian federal system, for example, you probably wouldn't be able to send that calendar, correct? At least not with the staple and the full color magazine looking like print form.
Right.
Are the rules just different in the United States? Are you dealing with, like, several different systems at once, or is it basically just like that?
No, it really actually varies in terms of the rules as they're written, but then even the rules as they're written, they're not consistently applied. So there'll be prisoners that, you know, they'll order a calendar, whether it's a contributor or just someone who wants a calendar, and they will you know, we'll send it to them because we have no reason to believe that it won't be allowed, and then it gets returned for, you know, a range of reasons, you know, disruptive to the institution, which is like a euphemism for we don't like this, it's too political, political in the wrong ways, no staples, no calendars. There's actually a bunch of jurisdictions that ban calendars as such, which I feel like speaks volume about the whole concept of like kind of like locking people away and throwing away the key, and you know, not even allowing them to keep track of the days. So like that's the reason that's come up. Increasingly you're seeing more and more jurisdictions not allowing people to order books or magazines from whoever they please, but rather that there's like a catalog that is approved by you know, the jurisdiction, the state or whoever, that you can order from, and that's the only place you can order from. So that's something that has been fought or is being fought within several different states across the U.S., where prisoners would no longer be able to order whatever book or magazine or calendar they choose.
How do you find contributors, both artists and writers?
We put out a call, like, every year, once we've come up with a theme, we put out, like, a little short piece of writing that sort of says, hey, the calendar's coming out, this is our theme, these are some of the topics that are suggested on that theme, but we're open to others, and then we just put it out there into the world. Again, you know, the internet, we just kind of, we tweet it, we send it to listservs, we, you know, do everything we can to get it out. In terms of prisoners, there's a list of political prisoners that we always send it to, but we also just encourage groups to forward it to whoever. So, you know, we try and just encourage it to get it as out into the world, both in prison and outside, as much as we can. And then we do also like seek out specific people on a given theme. If we say, you know, hey, such and such a writer or such and such an artist speaks to this particular topic that we know we want a contribution on, we do reach out to specific people in that way.
And then do you like meet like on Skype or whatever as a collective and decide among them? Or is there some kind of like selection process?
Yeah, basically. I mean, sometimes it's in one meeting, sometimes it's over several. We try and look for balance in terms of like topics. So I mean, say on this like health and care theme, for example, like I was saying at the outset, there's so many things that could fall under that we couldn't possibly hope to cover all of them, but at the same time there's some issues that we didn't want to see not represented. Like, we as a publication about prisons did not feel that we could put out an issue about health without talking about medical neglect, for example. So, you know, had we just put the call out and we'd gotten nothing about medical neglect, we would have seen that as a hole that we had to somehow fill. So, you know, we look at that in terms of representation of topics, but we also look at representation of who is, whose voices are there. You know, are there trans voices? Are there women's voices? Are there Indigenous voices? Are there, you know, we're a project that spans both the Canadian and the U.S. state. Like, are there voices from both sides of that border? So, you know, on all those types of issues, we try and make sure that we at least have, you know, you can never hope to be like completely representative of all things, but we try and make sure that there's no gaping holes, for sure.
And how do you decide who gets the money each year?
Well, there's two groups that we give to consistently that we sort of fundraise for on an ongoing basis. Those groups are Adamir, which is a Palestinian prisoner group based in Palestine, based in the West Bank. And that is something that we decided a long time ago with the inside and outside collective at the time, as you know, an aspect of internationalism, of international solidarity, that's something that a lot of North American political prisoners feel very strongly about. Palestine as being one specific inspiring site of struggle that it's important to be in solidarity with. So we've had an ongoing relationship with Adamir that we fundraise for them for many years now. The other group that we fundraise for on an ongoing basis is called RAP, the VAP campaign, where VAP is an acronym for Release Aging Prisoner, Release Aging People from Prison. And it's a group based in New York State that does exactly what it sounds like. It basically works for decarceration of older people through parole reform, through legislative change, through like any means that they can to try and to free elders, like free people that are aging behind bars and feeling all the effects of that, the health effects and everything that goes along with that. So those are the two groups that we fundraise for consistently, and then we try and add either one or two other groups per year, and that'll vary based on a number of factors, based on need, like if there's a crying need in any given year that like this is the group that, you know, obviously we would have to give to. Most years there's more than one, obviously, so we also sometimes link it to the theme that we would give to a group who's doing great work around the theme of that year's calendar.
And this year those groups are,
well, we actually have moved to, we used to decide before a given issue came out like who we were fundraising, so that we could say, like in the case of this year, you know, as you buy the 2019 calendar, the money from the 2019 calendar is going to go to VAP, Ademir, and this other group. More recently, we moved towards deciding more retroactively, so like once the money is in, just because, you know, the calendar is a project that, like, by virtue of being a calendar, it comes out once a year. So if we're making the decision who we're fundraising for back in August before we go to print, several months later when we actually have the money to give out, that crying need, that obvious group to give to, might have changed. So we now are more in the habit of announcing who we fundraised for last year. So I can tell you at this point that the 2018 calendar, in addition to VAP and Ademir, gave to the Abolitionist Law Center, which is a group based in Pennsylvania, which is doing great decarceration work in terms of legal reform, but also in terms of directly getting people out, you know, working case by case with specific individuals and getting them out of prison.
Your calendar is called like Freedom for Political Prisoners. Can you talk about why you think it's important to support and ultimately free political prisoners in particular?
Well, we think all prisoners and prisons are political. We actually have a section in the calendar that runs, you know, every year from year to year, entitled Some Thoughts on Prisons and Political Prisoners. But all prison is political. That being said, there's quite a few people behind bars who are there for their participation in social justice movements. And that's, you know, folks that have been there for longer than I've been alive, whose involvement dates back to groups like the Black Panthers, the American Indian Movement, the Young Lords. And it's people that have gone in much more recently for, you know, anything from like eco-justice or like anarchist organizing. You know, there were the Green Scare prisoners that went in a number of years ago. So, you know, folks involved in radical organizing on the outside, prison is one of the big threats that hangs over us. And, you know, if and when somebody ends up behind bars, we have a responsibility to continue to support them. And not only do we have a responsibility to continue to support them, we have a responsibility to continue to have them be involved in our movements, to be able to contribute from the inside and to draw on their analysis and their experience being inside, right? And so, like, continuing to be radicals, but from a very different position, from a very different life experience, from a very different locale. So, you know, we think it's important to, like, reach across the walls in that way and support political prisoners specifically. So we don't in any way see ourselves as doing that to the exclusion of supporting all prisoners and ending, you know, all prison, working for a world without prison. But, you know, I think all of us on the collective in some form or another are involved in other prisoner justice projects, but we think that this one as one that focuses on the idea that, you know, radicals go to prison and then we keep supporting them and we keep, you know, welcoming them into our struggles and involving them in our struggles, that's an important focus for this project.
Has it proved possible over the years to talk about prison abolition despite that focus on political prisoners?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think you'll find any greater supporters of prison abolition than political prisoners, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, here's a group of people that already have a radical analysis and then are experiencing prison firsthand themselves, right? And so, you know, these are folks that will organize on the inside bring that analysis in and also bring the analysis they learn in prison to outside movements if we on the outside will facilitate them doing so, right? Like if we'll like reach out and support their participation. So, you know, I think it only strengthens anti-prison work or prison abolition to have political prisoners involved in outside movements.
Mm-hmm. Calendar is pretty unapologetically radical, and you're mm-hmm. working with prisoners and sending it into prisons. I find like a lot of prison focus groups feel like a lot of understandable fear about espousing their politics so explicitly because of fear of putting their members at risk or possibly hurting their chances of getting their publication or whatever it is inside. Is that something that you've struggled with at all over the years, or is it more like you've just chosen to have it be like the way it is, and if it gets in, it gets in, if not, it's not, you know?
Well, it's certainly something we're attentive to insofar as when we make content decisions, like we look at a piece of art, we look at a piece of writing and we say, this is what's likely to happen if we send it to prison. And sometimes we choose to print that and sometimes we choose not to based on a whole range of particularities. Certainly we're not going to print something that is likely to get the author into trouble that they don't want to be in. You know, if somebody submits something and says, you know, here, print this, I want this printed with my name on it, then, you know, they make that call. And likewise, certainly we're not going to send something to a prisoner who is likely to get into trouble for having it without their consent. You know, if somebody orders something and they know what they're ordering, then, you know, certainly we'll try and send it to them and we're aware that it might get rejected, but we're not going to like send something that's, you know, seen as particularly incendiary into somebody who's already being watched. Like we, you know, we're cognizant of the risks involved, but, you know, like radical art and writing is very needed in prison, and when it can get in, then great, right? I would go back to the way I opened my answer to this question. It's something we're attentive to, something that's on our radars and that we want to make choices of what to print and who to send it to with our eyes open of what the consequences might be, but also with our eyes open of what the consequences of self-censoring might be as well.
You're listening to From Embers on CFRC 101.9 FM, or you might be listening to the podcast edition of From Embers on your smartphone. This week, we're talking about struggling alongside political prisoners with Helen of the Certain Days Freedom for Political Prisoners Calendar Collective. As always, if you want to contact us for whatever reason, feel free to send us an email at fromembers@riseup.net. What are some of the particular challenges of working in a collective that includes prisoners as well as non-prisoners?
The communications challenges we already talked about certainly are the most obvious ones. Like, you need to build that into our timelines. I mean, a publication of this scope and sort that was being done totally on the outside, we could put together a lot faster because there's not time for, you know, mailing things and then waiting for the answers. But there is also an experience gap. But, I mean, in a way, you could see that as a challenge, but you could also see that as a strength, right? And I do see it as a strength. But certainly, you know, there's times when, you know, inside members have to explain the reality to folks on the outside and vice versa, just in terms of like, you know, what's the prevailing climate around any given issue? You know, how are things going to be perceived by our readership that might not look the same from both sides of the walls? But conversely, you know, we're an inside-outside group, but we're also like a U.S.-Canadian mm-hmm. group. We're an intergenerational group. So, you know, there's like a range of experiences in all those ways. So really the only thing that's particular to being an inside-outside group is the logistics, right? The repression, censorship, and the time lag. And those, you know, they're a logistical challenge, but, you know, at this point we've been doing this for 18 years. We kind of, we have our methods of working around those logistics.
And what about working across the border?
I mean, like I was saying earlier, just with the internet, we physically cross the border a lot less than we used to, but I mean, the calendar crosses the border. It's a physical thing. It's the calendar is a physical thing. So, you know, it needs to get shipped places. I mean, that's not really, that hasn't really been too much of a challenge, to be honest with you. But, you know, when you get a political climate like we have now where, like, Trump is in power in the States, what it looks like to organize in the States and what it looks like to organize in Canada is a bit different. You know, it's not worlds apart. But, you know, in this kind of climate, when we sit down and talk about what is our theme going to be, what are the topics that we need to speak to, what's the most relevant, what's the most urgent, it's going to look different on both sides of the border. So, you know, we have to have conversations about, like, what all are the priorities to include based on both those realities.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like your project gets support from your broader community or movements on the outside?
Yeah, I'm always really encouraged. And again, this is something that's always in my mind at this time of year is like, you know, I run into people and they're like, oh yeah, I need to, you know, buy my calendars to give as holiday gifts. Or like we had a heartening thing happen here in Montreal a couple of weeks ago is a new group formed, a new collective here in town to organize around health issues. And they decided as their first project they want to put on a launch for the calendar since it's on the theme of what they organize around. So that wasn't us approaching them. They just, you know, up and decided they wanted to throw a launch for us. So, you know, those things happen and that's encouraging. You know, I'm always most pleased when a group that on the surface seems to have nothing to do with prisoner justice uses the calendar successfully as a fundraiser because A, it's us supporting them through being able to help them fundraise, but it's also making the links between those issues. So when there's like a refugee in sanctuary to avoid deportation and their support committee just buys up a bunch of calendars and then sells them to fundraise, then I'm always like, yeah, right on. You know, because that's what we're trying to do. Like, that's what the project's about, is making the links between those struggles.
And how do you think we're doing in general in terms of political prisoner support? Do you think that, like, people do enough in our movements on the outside to integrate political prisoners?
I always think it could be more. I mean, I work from a very particular vantage point insofar as I surround myself with people that are already doing that. So, you know, I don't want to dismiss the work that's already being done. But I think, you know, like I was saying earlier, political prisoners are just other comrades. Like, they're just people who are doing the same work as us, but who happen to have gone to prison for that work. And we just continue to include them and continue to you know, think of their contributions as central to all the things we struggle around, you know, colonialism, patriarchy, like anything that we could, you know, climate justice, anything really, you know, the political prisoner support piece is going to be automatic. And I don't think we're there yet. You know, I don't see that going on through like every organization and every project and every level of movement thinking. I think we still have a long way to go there. But certainly there's bright spots. You know, I don't want to dismiss the work that's already happening.
Do you see other collectives besides your own doing that kind of work across that wall?
I think so. I mean, there's some great political prisoner support projects out there. I mean, one that springs to mind, for example, is Running Down the Walls, which is an annual fundraiser that your listeners might know about already, but happens in a bunch of different locations across North America, and I think maybe some other places too, but certainly across North America. It's organized by ABCF chapters, Anarchist Black Cross chapters, people on the outside will organize sponsored runs, you know, like not a race in the competitive sense, but, you know, go for a run and raise money by doing so. And at the same time, people on the inside will run, you know, wherever they are. So maybe like one person running in a prison, or like even running inside their cell if they're on lockdown, just kind of running up and down or running on the spot. And so, you know, it's a way of being together on that one day, across the walls, but also of raising some money that then goes into the Anarchist Black Cross War Chest, which is a fund that, disperses money to, political prisoners for their direct needs, you know, like to go into their commissaries and give them like a monthly stipend for folks that don't have other means to support themselves. So, I mean, this year I know it was the first, I don't know if it's the first ever, but certainly the first year in a long time that there was a Running Down the Walls organized in Montreal. And that was, you know, organized by folks that have nothing to do with certain days. So, you know, we see it in our community locally that there's other people taking up that work for sure.
And what have you seen change in 18 years of doing the Calendar Project in terms of prison justice work, support for political prisoners? Like, is the climate similar to what it was in 2002?
Yes and no. I mean, I think that in some ways the analysis has advanced. Like, I feel like I see more younger organizers thinking of prisoner justice as central to a lot of other issues, you know, so those links I feel have been successfully made a bit more so. But one of the realities with political prisoners, certainly the longer term ones that have been around, you know, who went to prison for activities in groups like the Black Panthers or like the American Indian Movement, those folks are getting older, right? They're 18 years older than when we started, which means that many of them are now, you know, over 70 years old, in some cases over 80 years old. They've been in for upwards of 40 years. And so you see that in their health. You see that in the way that people do or don't carry hope of getting out. You know, the folks that I was first getting to know, the prisoners that I was first getting to know when Certain Days started, had just started going up for their first one or two parole hits. So they'd done 25 years, it's already a very, very long time to be in prison, but they thought, okay, now I'm parole eligible. Now there's a chance that I'm going to get out. You know, I have this outside support, you know, I have a pretty clean record. And, you know, since that time, there's the people that are still in, you know, there's some people that have not been parole eligible, but for those that have been, you know, just getting hit after hit. Recently, because of the work of groups like RAP and the Abolitionist Law Center, you've seen more people getting out, which is great, just in the last year. There's been several people that have gotten out. One of our artist contributors this year, Debbie Africa, you know, she contributed her art piece from within prison, but we mailed her free contributor calendar, her copy, on the outside. You know, between submitting her art and us going to press, she got out. So, but on the whole, in terms of what political prisoner work looks like now versus 18 years ago, there's the age factor, just to be really, really blunt about it. So like health and age really plays into it.
So focusing on political prisoners necessarily means focusing a lot on prisoners in the United States. Have you found ways at all to engage with the Canadian prison system? Is that something that you've thought about over the years?
Yeah, I mean, it's something we think about constantly. I mean, I think any time that a group is based in the U.S. and Canada, like within those two state realities, like things are bad in different ways on both sides of the border, and both states, you know, contribute to global misery in different ways, right? So one doesn't ever want to let the Canadian state off the hook because the U.S. state is so much more in your face about how bad it is, particularly now that you have like the Trudeau-Trump contrast. But, you know, Trudeau could not be doing the awful things he was doing without Trump to make him look not so bad, right? So, and then again, if you contrast the two prison systems, Canada does not have the long-term political prisoners that the U.S. does in terms of, you know, if you think of folks who went to prison for political action in the 60s, 70s, 80s in Canada, they're out now. And there are people who continue to go to prison for political reasons, but, you know, they're out after a year or they're out after 6 months. So there's not that same network of long-term political prisoners. There are politicized prisoners who we communicate with, who support us. As you were mentioning earlier, it's a lot harder to mail calendars into the Canadian prison system than it is in parts of the U.S. So there's that as a factor, too. Our biggest and sort of most ongoing contributor from within the Canadian prison system actually, unfortunately, died a couple of years ago. But, I mean, your listeners surely know about Peter Collins, you know, prisoner activist, very involved in, you know, a number of issues, but HIV, AIDS, and harm reduction work certainly being forefront among them. He had contributed several times over the years, but you know, died in prison of cancer in 2015. And since that time, we haven't really had anyone quite like Peter in terms of the, like, ongoing contribution to the calendar from within the Canadian prison system. So it's more, I would say, like, short-term and ad hoc, you know, whenever there's someone who goes in as a political prisoner for, like, a year or 6 months, we'll certainly make a point of reaching out to those folks. But you're right, it's, like, totally not the same as what things are like in the States in terms of our prisoner involvement.
Why do you think there haven't been the kinds of long sentences for activists and radicals here in Canada that you see in the United States?
I mean, part of me jokingly wants to say luck, but no, in reality, I think that, I mean, if you look at the function of the two different states, right, the U.S. and Canada, the U.S. is much more globally powerful, but, like, the most powerful states could not do what they were doing without their allies, the other states that hold them up, and those allies all play particular roles. And one of the roles Canada plays is, like, being, like, a junior partner to the U.S. in terms of imperialism, in terms of its role in global capital. And the specific niche that it occupies is being, quote-unquote, nicer than the U.S. And that comes through in a lot of ways. In terms of prison, it's complicated, right? Because, I mean, Canada imprisons more people per capita. If you look at particular populations, like the Indigenous population, there's a greater overrepresentation in Canada in the Canadian prison system versus in the U.S. So certainly not to say that the Canadian prison system is not as bad, but when you look at the ways in which the state specifically represses activists, represses radical organizers with prison as a tool, we just haven't seen the type of long-term imprisonment. And I think that that's part of an overall strategy. It's not because the Canadian state is nicer or is, like, you know, more democratic or, like, more open to protest. It's just the overall dynamics of the society and of, like, the ruling relations are just such that it would not serve the purpose of the state to be giving out those long sentences. The backlash would be greater. It just would not, it wouldn't have the same effect. It doesn't have the same effect. You know, for now, I caution us, is not to say that we can count on there never being that kind of long political prison sentences in Canada. But up to what we've seen so far, I would certainly, I would frame it in terms of, like, what are the two states' roles and what are the two states' ways of responding to dissent.
Your project has been a project for about as long as I have been an anarchist, basically. I would like love to one day be able to say I've been doing a project for 18 years. I wonder about like the structure of your collective, if there's particular things, particular strengths that you think have helped the project last so long. Can you talk a little bit about how you conduct yourselves, how your relationships work internally, how you like make sure that it's possible to keep doing the thing for the long haul?
I mean, I think at the basis of it is the relationship with the prisoners. Like I was saying at the beginning, you know, the project was born out of pre-existing relationships where we wanted a shared project from across the walls. And now that that shared project exists, there's like a deep level of commitment on the part of the collective members to continue to keep it going. People have come in and out, much more so on the outside collective than on the inside. Like on the inside, you know, people have left for parole reasons, but on the outside, people have left because they've left town, because they've had kids, because they're, you know, their life just no longer is compatible with the ways that they want to be involved, the level of involvement that they want to have. But you know, there's folks that have continued through significant life changes, you know, through moves to different cities, through having kids, through, you know, changes in their day-to-day lives. And I think it's around a commitment to the project, but also commitment to the relationships of amongst the people that are involved. You know, structurally, what do we do? I think being a really focused project, like we put out a calendar, we know what our work is, it's not going to change year to year. You know, we got to get submissions, we got to edit, do layout, print, sell the calendar, start over. So, you know, it's pretty clear what we have to do. So that helps to focus and to structure us. We are essentially a closed collective. You know, we're open to new people joining. We're not permanently closed, but people are able to join by agreement of the people that are already in. So they're in terms of compatibility or basis of political unity in that way. I think that is something that has helped us. We've never had to kind of re-examine the basic mandate or the basic values of what we do because there's already agreement with that mandate and those values when people join. If there's not, they don't join. You know, and again, not to say we don't have internal dialogue about, you know, refining where we stand on certain things, but like we never have to like start over. You know, we've never had discussions about our basic raison d'être being, you know, questioned from within the group. So I think that's something when I think over the years of the other projects that I've been involved with that have been more short-lived, sometimes they fall apart because it was never actually a basis of unity. Sometimes they fall apart because there's just too many different directions the group could go in terms of like the format of the project. And so it's really just been a perfect storm of us having all those factors in place that keep us together. You know, link that to the needs. As long as there's, you know, political prisoners in North America, there's a need, I think, for a project like this. So, you know, hopefully we can keep going until there aren't any more.
What more do you think needs to be done in general in terms of the prison movement or supporting prisoners? Not that you have to do it, but what could someone do?
I almost think that it's not what more needs to be done within prisoner justice or political prisoner movements. It's what needs to be done to make that not seem like a separate movement. Mm. You know, like if within feminist spaces, prison issues were present, and in, you know, disability spaces, prison issues were present, and in, like, student organizing, prison issues were present, and housing organizing, prison issues were present, and they are to a certain extent, you know, again, not to negate the work that's already going on, but, you know, I think the more we can see all of the issues we work on as not being separate and see the very real and very concrete links between the things we work on, the stronger position we'll be in, right? Like, I mean, I think it is like one movement, one fight. But of course, people have their own specific things that they work on, right? Like, people all have their own focuses, and that's, I think, a great strength as well. But the more that we can cross-pollinate between those issues, and, you know, in the case of prison specifically, if people can think of prisoners, you know, if people can think of whatever movement work they're doing, how can we bring in the voices of prisoners, and how can we, you know, bring this campaign that we're doing into prisons, and you know, bring prisoner perspectives outside into the work that we're doing, I think we'll be in a stronger position.
How do you think those groups could do that concretely? Like, say I'm in like a feminist collective or like an environmentalist group, like how can I make sure my organizing includes long-term prisoners or prison issues in general?
Write to them. Like, I mean, I'm aware of your listeners are in lots of different places. So I guess, like, if you visit our website as a start, rather than try and sort of speak to specific organizations that are on the ground in any specific place, lists of political prisoners are out there. And just, you know, reach out and form a relationship. You know, some people foster like an ongoing relationship where they correspond with prisoners in an ongoing basis. It's not something to be entered into lightly. Like, I wouldn't want to encourage people to imply to a prisoner that they're starting a long-term writing relationship if they're not. But, you know, it's pretty hard to include people that you don't already have a relationship with. So if in some form, you know, an organization can build links with prisoners, that's, I think, the way to start. So use your example of a feminist collective. If you're in a feminist collective, somewhere where there are also women in prison, where there might be, say, an organization in town that facilitates women in prison maintaining relationships with their children on the outside, maybe the feminist collective wants to do a fundraiser for that group, or bring in a speaker from that group, or co-sponsor an event with that group. Maybe your feminist group wants to do like an all women and trans running down the walls in your city, and, you know, send that money to the war chest and ask if it can be earmarked for female political prisoners. You know, it just becomes a matter of brainstorming. What are the links between the issues we work on and prison? And, like, there will always be links. Whatever issue you're working on, I can guarantee there's going to be links.
Is there anything I didn't ask you about that you wished I asked you about in this interview?
You know, we talked a lot about the project and, you know, what it does and why I'm involved in it. But in the end, there's a calendar, and it looks beautiful. There's a lot of writing in it, and makes a great gift for yourself or others. So I would encourage people to check it out. On our website, which is certaindays.org, we have a list of places to buy. If folks happen to be in a city where they're sold in a brick-and-mortar store, there's a lot of those around the continent. And there's a list on our website of what those places are. You can also order directly from our website. We have distributors in the U.S. and in Canada for individual orders, as well as for bulk orders if people want to use them as a fundraiser. So, yeah, buy the calendar. Support these great groups that we fundraise for.
You took my closing question. I was going to ask you how to get the calendar.
Okay.
There you go. Thanks so much for your time, Helen. It's been really great talking to you today.
Thank you.
That's all we have for you today on From Embers, but speaking of the calendar, I just wanted to mention an event that's happening here in Kingston next week. On Monday, December 3rd, from 3 p.m. until 5 p.m., stop by the AKA Autonomous Social Center and you can learn how to make your own notebook using a needle, a thread, and past year's covers from Certain Days calendars. The event is free, but any donations you choose to give will go to the Certain Days Collective. And you'll also get to take home a notebook that you made yourself and the skills to do it again. The event is free, but any donations you choose to give will go to the Certain Days Collective. You can also buy this year's calendars at the AKA during that event or during open hours of their Blue Heron book and zine shop. I believe this week those hours are Monday from 3 p.m. until 8 p.m. or Thursday from 5:30 until 7 p.m. And you can find AKA Downtown at 75 Queen Street at the corner of Wellington. And for those of you who are listening to the podcast edition and are not in Kingston, check for a local launch event for the calendar, as they're happening in a bunch of different cities in the US and in Canada. Or failing that, you can order calendars online at www.certaindays.org. I also think the notebooks from past year's calendar covers is a really cool idea, and maybe I'll just leave that in the podcast edition so that others who might also have leftover calendars or even used calendars from past years can take that idea on and maybe do it themselves. Thanks a lot for listening. Bye-bye.
Where did you get this?
Your friendly neighborhood anarchist.
More of an anarchist militant.
People involved in social struggles than everybody else.
People have been waiting for some content.
Radio and show.
The final straw, and I'm William Goodenough.
And I'm Percy Goodness.
The final straw radio.noblogs.org.
If you're listening, you are the resistance.